This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger. I'm back. Dylan doesn't have to be alone anymore. How's it been, Dylan?
Well, it's nice. As I mentioned at the end, I know you haven't listened to the end of my last episode. You haven't gotten that far yet.
No.
Yeah, but basically at the end I say how difficult these those solo shows are, talking to myself.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because I feel like, you know, against popular opinion, I don't just talk to myself all the time randomly.
I thought that was what the Patreon is for, just that you could talk randomly to yourself.
That is true. I do that every night after every G1 show, in fact, except for when we do these shows. But every other night, I think there's like 8 or 9 of the 12 that we've had so far, I talk to myself about the entire card, give opinions, break down matches, and have fun on there. So lots of fun stuff on there. Everyone check out the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. August is coming up. I'll be doing more too, because Stardom has their 5-star Grand Prix, and I'll be talking to myself over those shows too. So
listen, that's an incredible value. Just not putting over ourselves too much, but if you get shows for the G1 and for the 5-star, that's great.
See, that's what I'm saying. You don't get that on the other Patreons on there. You don't get those kind of shows. You don't get shows talking about Tiger Mask W on there. I just had a new episode of that put up recently. You know, there's all kinds of fun stuff on there. You don't get Rage in the Cage on there. I'm sure we'll have another one of those soon in August. But right now, G1 has taken over wrestling in many ways, it feels like. And we're back again for another show, but we have some other fun stuff to talk about as well. You know, so I'm really looking forward to this show. And it's good to have you back, Strig. I missed you. Where were you anyway?
I told you, I couldn't even believe that you forgot where I went. I went to the Sendai Girls UK show.
I thought you were there for wrestling, like, yeah. But I didn't want to say for sure and get it wrong and say, like, yeah, you were there because I didn't want to get it wrong, but I figured I remember you telling me that, and I just didn't want to say something and then somebody be like, or then you'd be like, actually, I wasn't there. And I'd like to correct you.
I was there for the weekend. I had a lot of fun on the weekend. Met a lot of great guys, a lot of friends, and a lot of new people I met there. So shout out to everyone I met. I shared the hotel room for the first night with good brother Mort. So we had a fun night out on the Friday in the Gifford Arms. That's the pub that everybody goes to after the Fight Club Pro shows. That was a great night out. Was there for Friday Return of the Sendai Part 2. Which actually had a great main event for the FCP tag team title when Chris Brooks and Kyle Fletcher defended against Dash Shisako and Meiko Satomura. That was a very cool match. And on the Sendai Girls show, you know, this show, I never had so much fun at a wrestling show. And I truly believe that this show was the one with the most positive atmosphere I've ever been to. Just everybody being there had such a great time, and before the show started, the entire Sendai Girls roster went into the ring like they usually do for their regular shows in Japan too. They played the Sendai Girls theme, they went into the ring, and Meiko took the mic, and she first addressed the crowd in English and nearly began crying when she said that it was her dream to put on a show in England, and this is the first one they did, and she's so proud of that. And then she said the same basically in Japanese too. So that show is going to be on the Fight Club Pro streaming service. And you really should check that out. It was a great show. Like the four-way in the beginning, Viper, Giselle Shaw, Ida Dawn, and Jody Threat was okay. But all the other matches really delivered. Like Iga and Martina had the funniest match I have ever seen live. I, this was 10 minutes long, and I was laughing for the entire time. This was incredible stuff.
And seeing Iger live must have been an experience.
Iger is absolutely amazing. Like, after the show, we stood there with the Schadenfreude guys, and all of a sudden, like, Iger appears. She just stood there, all of a sudden. And there was a little girl, and this little girl looked at Iger, and Iger got down on her knees, and they took a picture together. And then she just wandered around merchandise all the time. That was just so incredible to see.
Was that deliberate, or just because she had no idea where to go after the show, would you say?
I choose to believe the second one.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's kind of awkward, like, if you're wrestling in a new building. Like, I've never wrestled anywhere that far, but I have been in places I've never been before, and it can get kind of weird. So sometimes after a show, if you don't know what you're doing like that, I can only imagine if it's somewhere in a different country, in a different language. And I'm sure Iger doesn't speak English, but, you know.
And they also built that up very great. They on the Friday at the Fight the Pro show, Martina had a match. It was an 8-man tag match. And they briefly played a video of Iger's face, and Martina, like, was really frightened about that and didn't even want to go to Manchester the day after. That was very cool. They had a great no DQ match between Dashi Sako and Kaylee Ray. They had a very cool intergender match with Valkyrie from Ireland against Chris Brooks. And in the semi-main, I think that was my favorite match of the show. Charlie Evans and Billy McKenzie defended the titles against Shiro Hashimoto and Yu. A very cool match, too. And we had the next one in the saga between Tony Storm and Meiko Satomura. So, from top to bottom, really a great show.
Yeah, I'm glad you had a lot of fun, man. It seems like it was worth it. For sure. So, I'm happy for that. That sounds like a great show. Kind of jealous you get to see all these people in person, but it's all good. And it seems like you had a great time, and I'm sure a lot of the people there. This was something that people, even Brother Mort, traveled for, so you know it was a good deal there.
He traveled, and it took him. We were at the Fight Club Pro venue on Friday, right around bell time, because Mort's plane got delayed so often, and it took him almost as long to travel from Denmark to England like it would take him to travel to Japan.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that sounds very difficult and stressful. So I'm sorry for that, but hopefully the show made up for it. And obviously just getting to hang around you for a night probably made up for it more than anything else for him. I don't want to speak for Brother Mort, but I think he'd agree with that.
Oh, it was a great time around with all the people. So that was that weekend, and you said that G1 is taking over so much in wrestling. But of course, I want to get into some news and notes from other groups and other shows, other promotions here before we go to the G1 Climax shows. First of all, we have an updated card on the Takeda Mania Empire 2 show from Korakuen Hall on August 26. There is a Evil Course versus Wild Beast match. Well, the Evil Course is a bad translation for the Japanese word Yado, basically meaning evil way or heresy or something like that. But Evil Chorus is also a valid translation for that. The Wild Beast on the other side is Katsuyuki Fujita. He's teaming with Nosawa Rongai and Fujita to take on Ken Oka, Katsusada Higuchi, and Atsushi Onita, the natural trio.
Oh no, that sounds like a terrible match.
It does. There will be a special talk battle between Akira Maeda and Keiji Muto. Then we mentioned the two matches before that are on top of the card. The New Japan and 0-1 exchange battle. Yuji Nagata, Shinjiro Otani, and Yota Tsuji against Satoshi Kojima, Tatsuya Takaiwa, and Shoki Kitamura. And the Suzuki brothers, Minoru and Hideki, take on Naomichi Marufuji and Masato Tanaka, and also announced for the show are Konosuke Takeshita and Sanshiro Takagi so far.
Have you noticed that Maeda seems to be doing these talk battles often lately?
Yeah.
He's somebody that he's kind of been obscure for a while in the world of Japanese pro wrestling. But
yeah, he's mostly appeared on these MMA or kickboxing shows, like with The Outsider or these groups. He's been appearing there. and hasn't been doing much wrestling lately. But yeah, from now on then, he appears on these shows.
Yeah, well, I mean, he really didn't for a long time, but just these last few months, it seems like he's. I know he had a talk about him. Didn't he have one with Kobashi on Fortune Dream?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, see, so that he's got two this year after really being obscure. The only time I remember seeing him was like they had some interview 5 years ago where he basically said everyone expected him to like talk about how much he hated New Japan nowadays. But he was actually kind of cool with it. Like he was like, they're making money. Like they're, you know,
yeah,
they
have a lot. That's all Maeda is about. Come on.
Yeah, that's kind of like that was more or less his point. He's like, the fans are into it. They're making money, so I can't knock it too much. Yeah. that was the gist of his thoughts on modern day New Japan. But like I said, because everyone thought he's like this, you know, he's like the guy that's the real pro wrestler in Japan. Whether that's true or not is questionable. But that's kind of just that. Yeah, exactly. Like, his rep, though, is the one... Like, his whole gimmick was basically that he was the one that wanted to fight for real.
Exactly.
In wrestling. So they thought he'd hate all this new stuff. But he's like, whatever. So now, after all these years away, now he's doing these talk battles against people he never really... Like, he never wrestled Kobashi.
No.
Like, what did he have to do with Fortune Dream on there? And I don't even think he ever wrestled Muto. Like, maybe he did very early on.
Very early on, but they... Could only have crossed paths when they were both very young.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if anything, they weren't who they would be. Maybe Maeda was, but Muto wasn't quite there yet.
No.
So
it must have been before Muto's excursion to America.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was gone by 88. So, you know, like, Maeda had to... Yeah, so Muto bringing him in... Listen, Maeda's just a freaking cool guy.
Yeah,
I think that's the point of all this.
He also was on the Pro Wrestling Masters show in February when he accompanied the team of Fujiwara, Nagai, and Takako Fuke to the ring to their match against Fujinami, Choshu, and Liger. So he's been doing some stuff for them, too.
Yeah, see, but you know, I don't know what stories they'd have together, but it would be interesting to see.
Yep.
He's a really interesting guy. He's always been one of the more fascinating figures in pro wrestling to me, Akira Maeda. So
he's
I'm happy to get these. Yeah. That match, the Hideki Suzuki and Minoru Suzuki match, that was really good, too, on that show.
Yeah, will be a cool show, definitely. And on the point of Keiji Muto... Wrestle 1 ran Currican Hall today. In the main event, Shotaro Ashino and Yusuke Kodama won the vacated tag team title because Seigo Tachibana is out with a neck injury, and he was the tag champs with Shuji Kondo before. And in the main event, Yusuke Kodama, who's usually a cruiserweight in Wrestle 1, pinned Manabu Soya to win the titles for Enfant Terrible. And they are defending the belts at the Pro Wrestling Love in Yokohama show on September 1st in Yokohama Bunker Gymnasium against El Lindemann and Shigehiro Irie, which should be a very great match.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting team.
Yeah.
I would love to see that match.
And they will also have a Keiji Muto debut 35th anniversary match with Keiji Muto, Kasayashi, and Pegaso Illumina taking on... Now, this is a real dream team, Dylan. Zodiac, René Dupré, and Tao.
No. Like, this brings back horrible memories.
Pro Wrestling Love era in All Japan.
Yeah, like the worst of the Pro Wrestling Love era. Like the 2008,
like
2009. Like very, very not good era. of All Japan, I would have to say. Like, I'm surprised Kenzo wasn't in that match.
Yeah, where's Kenzo?
Yeah, he should have been there. But I'm glad they reached out to René Dupré. I'm glad he's still wrestling after all these years. I always wonder what happened to these obscure names in wrestling. And it's good to see him still kicking around. Along with Zodiac, who would have guessed?
Yeah, let me see what Kenzo did recently. Oh, he was on Pro Wrestling A-Team. That's much like Secret Base.
Yes, a very small company.
René Dupré... Yeah, he has been wrestling in Canada mostly.
Ah, okay.
Still very active as I'm seeing this here. Yeah.
Maybe he'll be able to get he'll parlay this match into a shot somewhere.
Maybe.
Back in Japan or Wrestle 1 again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I don't think
he's still really young at this point.
Yeah, he's been in WWE when he was very young.
Yeah.
35 years old. So.
Yeah, see, 35 and he's been wrestling for like 20 years.
Yeah. He's been wrestling since, I don't know when, 1997. Wow.
holy crap, like, how old is that? Like, he must have been like 10 years old or something when he started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like 97 for Rene Dupree? Dang, he beat me. Like, you don't see that often.
97. Yeah, we have a match from him in our match guide in from 98.
My God.
It's
Rene Dupree.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the wrestle one. I also wanted to bring up Pro Wrestling Noah because you talked about it on your recent show on the free feed of the Eastern Lariat because you brought up the N1 Victory Tournament. And when you talked about it, we didn't have the full lineup for a tournament yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were still assuming that there would be like 16 guys in the tournament. And yeah, we were assuming that there would be like more than 10 guys. But they opted to go with just 5 guys in each block. And I gotta say, this is a really refreshing system they have put up here. When we talked about it for the first time, the N1 Victory, we said it's a very bad look because you have to compare it with the G1 Climax, not only because of the name, but because they are starting the tournament right after the G1 ends. So we didn't really believe that this was a good idea. But now they did everything to erase these comparisons between the two tournaments because A, it's a 5 guys block, and B, the champion is not in it. Kaito Kiyomiya said he wouldn't be in it because he wants to face the winner of the tournament in the main event of Sumo Hall, which makes this a real number one contendership tournament. So I'm really a big fan of this.
Now, on paper, I like that. I'm with you. I'd rather it just be the champion not in it. And as I mentioned on the show, I think it keeps his matches fresh, too.
Exactly.
In the future. So I thought that was like a really smart thing for Kaito. I mentioned on the show that I really think his title reign is probably going to continue after this either way. And I think that keeping his matches fresh was a very strong idea. Like, this is a very clever way to get about that. My issue with it is that for this new tournament, you start off with a guy saying he's not going to be in it. I just thought that that's kind of like a bad look, you know. On there. It's not the best way to start. And not to mention, it was the same night that Kotage pulled out and went to the junior heavyweights again.
Yeah, I thought wanted to talk about that too later.
Yeah, I thought that was like two guys pulling out. I basically buried all of their booking of Kotage for like the last 3 years on the show, if you didn't listen to last week. But basically, like, I just think that's not that's not starting off on the best foot, you know, to have two guys pull out. And, you know, 10 guys, I'm with you. Again, I think it's good they cut out some of the, you know, trim the fat more or less, you know, on that. I think even G1 would not, you know, it wouldn't hurt if they took out the 4 worst guys in this. And,
yeah, you
and
know,
short,
the thing that, is, you don't have to tell me that Bad Luck Fale is in the G1 Climax because Bad Luck Fale is going to win the tournament. So, like, I really like that they got rid of these middling guys they usually had for the Global League, like, for example, Akitoshi Saito, Mohamed Yone, A Quiet Storm. Nothing against these guys, but you know that they will not be winning the tournament. They will not be headlining Sumo Hall.
Exactly. Like, see, that I'm cool with that. Like, you know, I'm really cool with that. I wonder if the reputation will be kind of what we speculated on before, though. Because me, I like it this way. I'd rather it just be the main guys and keep it that way. I'm cool with that. But the problem is, will people think, oh, only half of the guys in the G1, not as many guys in the Champion Carnival. No, you know, Noah must not be that deep. It must be a smaller company, you know. Because I can see people thinking that.
They are not that deep.
Well, I mean, it's totally true, but still. Sometimes perception is reality, obviously.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but if you look at these guys, realistically, any one of those, except for the outsiders, could win the tournament, so I think that's a very good look. Makes it very competitive.
Yeah, and Nakajima, because he just got the title shot.
Yeah, that's true. So, Block A, Naomichi Marufuji, Takashi Sugiura, Goshi Ozaki, Masaki Tamiya, and Alex Hammerstone from Major League Wrestling. For Alex Hammerstone, this is going to be a true test. Because on TV, he usually has these, like, under 10-minute matches. And now, in this tournament, he has to have longer matches, as you put out on your recent show, Dylan. But I really think that he is in the right block to do so, because he is in there with Marufuji, Sugiura, Shiozaki, and, well, K- Kitamiya to a degree too, but those are guys that have a lot of experience and can guide him through the matches.
Yeah, Sugiura and Go, like, that should be, that's the easiest people to have big matches with, I would say. So if he can get two good matches out of them, that'll help him anyway, because it'll help him grow. You know, so I think that's the best thing about this for him, is that he'll have a chance to, you know, take from this style, take from these veterans, that someone like Go's wrestled all over the place and has a lot to offer him, insight-wise. And Sugiura, just hit him hard and you'll have a good match.
Yeah.
It's very easy to have a good match with Sugiura. Marufuji, it's kind of an interesting case with him, because he hasn't looked all that great this year, to be honest with you. But I think he's going to try and step up the best he can for this tournament, and I look forward to it. I think he also has a chip on his shoulder because of what happened with Kenta. So I think he's going to be trying to prove himself that he can represent Noah even better. So I think I think both blocks are really good, but A block, yeah, good stuff there.
Yeah, really surprising entrant in block B, because we were all looking at Hideki Suzuki being in, and I know you're crushed that he's not in. But I'm really happy that Masaki Mochizuki made the cut. And I didn't expect him to be in, to be honest, because last time he was in a tournament in a different company, it was for the juniors in the Junior Tag League for All Japan last year. But he had been in the New Japan World Tag League with Yuji Nagata a couple of years back. So he has some heavyweight experience. And besides him, we have Katsuhiko Nakajima, Shuhei Taniguchi, Kenno, and Elio del Dr. Wagner. Junior, of course.
Yes, don't forget that. We had a discussion about that on Rage of the Cage.
I know, it's a very stupid name to go with.
It's not that stupid, but I understand how... I know it sounds stupid to English,
yeah.
But it could be worse. Clearly, to me, love Mochizuki in there, but I also think this totally puts to bed any argument of, like, why is Kotage in the juniors and he's a heavyweight? You know, like
that is the real question.
Yeah. Like, what? Like, he's smaller than Harada, who you've said before is too small for the heavyweight.
Exactly. And he's Kotage. I believe Kotage is not bigger than Tadasuke, for example. We talked about him on our last show too.
Yeah, Tadasuke is even bigger than him too. Half of the juniors are bigger than Mochizuki in the company right now. So, pretty much, if not a majority of them. So,
Be about the same size as Kenno. Wouldn't he?
Yeah. I think Mochi might be a little smaller, actually, even than Ken right now. But the point is, he's smaller than a lot of these guys, especially the one that just jumped back to the junior heavyweights. He's smaller than. So I don't know what the deal is there. But I really think that's an irrelevant point, especially in Noah these days. But still, and they proved it yet again with putting him in the tournament. But the good thing is, you'll have some great matches, because he matches up really well with Nakajima and Kenno, especially. So those are like three of my, or a few of my most anticipated matches of the tournament there. Dr. Wagner, he's going to have to step up, because he's kind of the weak link on paper.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's going to take to the style, because he's hardly someone I consider, you know, strong striker. He kicks hard. That's really not his game at all when it comes to that. So I don't know how he's going to fit in this block, to be honest with you. But we'll see how it goes. I think it could be some interesting stuff there. And again, he's got a lot of great talent. Even in this block, I think that block is strong when it comes to talent. So he's going to get away with, you know, maybe not even being the best, but he could be guided to good matches. So I'm hopeful of that. I love the block, too.
Block A will have hard lariats and hard punches. And block B will all about kicks.
Exactly. I like that separation. I just want to say one thing about Hideki. I'm not so... I was sad, because Hideki, I think, is a great worker. And I think he'd have been perfect to, like, win this, I feel like. But my bigger problem... Like, if he's not in it, that's okay. Mochizuki's a great outsider, like you said. The problem, though, that I didn't like was they just went to a 30-minute draw with Hideki and Go on the other show. Which to me, you know, set up a grudge match in this tournament for them. But I guess not.
The thing that I'm taking away from this is that Hideki was probably not available for the tournament, and that's the only reason he's not in.
Yeah, so that's a shame.
Yeah.
Maybe we could have had more than 10 guys if he was around, like I said. But Whatever. Like I said, I hopefully they can have a rematch one day with Hideki and Go. Let there be a real winner.
Yeah.
Or some great looking tournament though.
Yeah, great looking tournament, and it's starting in Nagoya on August 18. This will be a Samurai TV taping with Goshi Ozaki against Alex Hammerstone and Katsuki Nakajima and Masaki Mochizuki. Most of these shows will have two N1 victory matches, and it's much like the Champion Carnival schedule used to be in the early 90s. Like one or two matches on top for the tournament. And the only show that has four tournament matches is the second to last one in Kirkon Hall with Maro Fuji and Hammerstone and Shiozaki and Sugiura in Block A. And in Block B, Nakajima versus Kenno and Taniguchi versus Mochizuki. The tournament concludes on September 16 from the Big Ideon Arena Osaka. And also announced for this show, Kazushi Sakuraba. He's the worldwide celebrity that Nosawa brought in.
I mean, who better to be Nosawa's friend than Sakuraba? Out of all. Well, it's a good. The one thing I'll say about that is, it's a sign of good things for this company that they're able to bring in these guys. Which I mean, like we saw it earlier in the year, he had this interview where he said he would go to Noah, but they have to pay up. Like that was the gist of what he said, and he did.
Yeah.
Like so. Good for them. Like, things have been going well lately. So, good stuff there. And running the big arena in Osaka.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, like, All Japan opted out from running the big Osaka venue. They ran the small one, and Noah is going into the different direction. They're really focusing on bigger stuff now, even with Sumo Hall coming up in November, too. And as you said on one of our last shows a couple of weeks ago, it's really exciting that Noah has big shows coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I felt like they have way more upward mobility than All Japan right now. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll see how this goes. Maybe that won't last.
We'll see.
Yeah, but like the fact that they're doing it and the fact that they're able to bring in these guys, like Hideki's been wrestling more for them lately.
Mm-hmm.
Sakuraba's coming in. Mochizuki's in. So they're doing some good stuff there in Noah. So I'm really, really interested in that.
Yeah, I recently watched the first show of the Junior League from June 26, and that really was a great show from top to bottom. It had a very good Hajime Ohara against Chris Ridgeway match, and the tag title match in the main event was very good too. Another good Kazuma Sakamoto match, Dylan.
That's right. Like I said, listen, who was his partner in that match?
Well, Kazuma was champions with Takashi Sugiura, and they lost to Axis.
Yeah, see, there you go. Like, it's Sugiura, he's the magic man. But the other two were really good, too, in Axis.
Yeah.
So, Kazuma, we know the secret. Pair him with Sugiura.
So, check that show out. And also, on the Noah YouTube, they uploaded the tag title match from July 21st. Shiozaki and Nakajima against Kaito Kiyomiya and Shuhei Taniguchi. That's up there, too. I'm going to watch that today after we record this. So, yeah, I guess that's everything for Pro Wrestling Noah right now.
Hey, what did you think about Kodage going to the juniors? You teased you had an opinion on that.
Oh, yeah. Basically, my opinion is the same like yours. I think it's a stupid move.
Yeah. Just totally mishandled.
No idea what the idea behind that is. The one good thing about it is that the junior heavyweight scene gets a great asset back.
Yeah.
That's the one good thing.
Yeah, and like the junior division isn't as dead as other companies.
No.
Like, you know, the junior division is kind of like important to Noah, so it's not that terrible, but it's still pretty bad. Like things could have gone a lot better. Like once they put the cape on him, you know, it felt like they killed him, pretty much. And he did a great job. He made the best of that gimmick. So that is one thing. But I hope that this move to the juniors means all that stops. Like I said on the last show, get back to what made him popular in the first place. You know, and that would be a good thing if they could do that. But I just thought there was so much more interesting things if Harada had jumped to heavyweight instead. Like, they could reform their tag team. And now they're going to reform their tag team in the juniors.
Yes, exactly. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. And, well, they will be, I don't know, who else is there to be junior tag champions right now? There's Rattles and there's them.
Like, so that gives me a headache.
I don't know.
I just want to know your opinion.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, then let us turn our attention to New Japan Pro Wrestling. They also have announced some stuff for their upcoming Junior Heavyweight Tournament, because they will be having the Super J Cup in America. And they announced some participants of that. First, they announced TJP coming back to New Japan. They also announced Sho and Dragon Lee to be in the tournament, and now they announced three more guys in Ryosuke Taguchi, Taiji Ishimori, and Karistiko of CMLL. And Dylan, now that Karistiko is in, who is he beating in the finals?
I don't know. In CML, and like his rep, it's funny because his rep is this egomaniac, but in CML he often loses.
Yeah, I know. More
than that. So I hear it, the only thing I know is I don't know if he'll win the finals, but I think what will happen is they'll have another six-man tag match, and he'll stay in the ring for like 5 minutes afterwards. I just soak up all of the applause. That's the only thing I want. Win or lose, he did the same thing when he was in that Michinoku Pro.
Yeah, the Fukumon World League, he won that too.
Yeah, he won that. Well, he didn't win the Super J Cup last time, but he still stood in the ring afterwards. And win or lose, that's all I care about from him. That's his main addition to the tournament, is standing in the ring, soaking up the applause. He needs it. He has no friends in real life, so this is all he has.
That's an interesting lineup so far. Let's see how that goes.
I like it. Yep. That's way better than I thought it would be, to be honest. Super J Cup.
Absolutely.
My only problem is that it doesn't really fit what the J Cup was originally. Like, it goes against the spirit, kind of like the last one. Mm. That's really a big thing. It's all New Japan guys, pretty much, outside of like a couple of people. But still, from a wrestling perspective, this six is a good. Like, they've got off to a really good start.
Yep, they did for sure. Good. Then let us turn our attention to the big one, to the G1 Climax. First, we're going to talk about the show from July 30 from the Takamatsu City General Gymnasium. They drew 2,820 people for that show. And I don't know if you saw any of the undercard stuff. That was the usual stuff as well. Nothing that really stood out to me. We got going for the G1 Climax matches with a match between Kota Ibushi and Bad Luck Fale. The usual stuff. Ibushi got the win. So, yeah.
Yeah, if you listen
main takeaway was that Chase Owens attacked Kota Ibushi and they used to be friends, Dylan. That is horrible.
Isn't it crazy? Nothing even happened between them to change, really, their personal relationship, but he just attacked them for no reason, really, other than he was just with Fale. He has no morals.
Maybe he's just an asshole.
But, yeah. If you listen to the Patreon shows, I really have hated Fale in his last two matches, even more than usual, against Ospreay. I thought that Ospreay match was, like, one of the worst of the tournament.
It's terrible.
And this was a barely better. Like, barely better. So, one of the worst Kota Ibushi matches you will ever see, I would say.
Yeah. So, let's move on. A match that was far better than the one before, followed with Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Will Ospreay, both guys at 4 points now. 20 minutes, 2 seconds. Dave Meltzer gave it 4.5 stars. We have it at 8.64. I absolutely adored this match. This was phenomenal stuff between the two. Just the pace of it all was so crazy. They went so fast, and these reversals and counters and just all the technical masterpieces they did in the match. It was phenomenal to me to see this match, and the finish was outstanding, with Zack just jumping in into the Manji Gatame and submitting Will Ospreay. Dude, I can't even praise this enough. This was outstanding.
First of all, you started this off with the lowest praise ever, by being better than the first match, I would have to say.
I emphasize the word far better.
Yeah. Like I said, I had better matches with my teddy bear when I was 4 years old than that opening match. You know, like let's just be real about it. The Ospreay and Sabre, I mentioned here, I broke this down a little bit on the Patreon, but more or less, I thought they tried to meld their styles together. In a lot of ways, like they were trying to come together between Ospreay's high speed, high flying type of style, and Zach's more technical style. And I mentioned that he's somebody that really, to me, I think he gets a little bit mischaracterized sometimes as somebody who's this technical, slow worker. But I've always called him to be World of Sport on speed.
Yeah.
Like, he wrestles at a frantic pace, even with his style. So I thought they melded well together. Some stuff wasn't – I didn't love this as much as you did or Dave Meltzer did. But still, I thought it was a good match. Some stuff worked and some stuff didn't. There was this really weird exchange that – like, the thing is about this match, they'd have a weird exchange that didn't work and then immediately follow it with a great exchange. It felt like that totally worked. So I think that they were kind of like, you know – I felt, to me, I don't think you felt this way based on how much you loved it, but it felt like they were saving it up, saving something for their Royal Quest match, which I think is going to happen now. Like, that was my take from the beginning, that there would not be a world title match from Okada on Royal Quest.
Yeah, but they set it. They could have set it up with Ospreay defeating Zack.
That is true, but, you know, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Zack did win this. And I thought this was a match that Ospreay should have won early in the tournament, because Zack's a very believable win for the junior champion, but you know it was a good match, though. You have to give it up to these two. They did some great stuff here, and I agree with you, that finish was awesome. Like, that was a huge, you know, like a great way to end it. He basically countered the Stormbreaker right into the octopus stretch.
Yeah, like, what's your take on this? Is Zack better with juniors, or is Ospreay now just better with a guy like Zack in the heavyweights?
I don't know. Like I said, these two, I think they both had pretty good tournaments. And, like, it's funny because you mentioned that. I thought Zack's match with Tanahashi was an amazing match, very underrated. But he also had that match versus Evil, which was very short, it felt like. And they didn't really have a chance to, you know, go with all they wanted to do here. So Zack here, he's back on his game against Ospreay. I think either one of those things could be true when you look at it, because I definitely think Ospreay's better against other juniors than heavyweights. So if you ask me that, and Zack, like, even though he's a heavyweight, he's really, like, the dude's like 160 pounds. Like, you know, so it's fine. Like, you know, I think Ospreay works better against smaller opponents than big guys.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Except for Archer, because he had a great match with Archer at the start. Still one of the best matches in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a better point, too, yeah. Well, Zack even had an acceptable match with Bad Luck Fale because of the idea they had to finish the match.
Yeah, like I said, that was a match from the beginning that I pegged as like a very easy match for Zack to win.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically played out exactly how I thought it did. So I enjoyed it for that aspect. Definitely one of the better Fale matches, I would say, but still not that good.
What did you think about Katsushika Okada against Lance Archer? Going into this match, I strongly believe that Archer would win this one. But now we have Okada at 12, still undefeated, the only undefeated wrestler in the tournament so far, being the champion on top of it. Defeated Lance Archer, and I kind of sense that a lot of people had this on upset, because Archer would have been a great title defense in September or October.
Nah, like, I know, I think I was in the minority for all this, but I didn't think that was going to happen. And not because Archer didn't deserve it, because he's been one of the best people in this G1 to me, but just they don't really book that way. He's still kind of like, him and KES did nothing for like 3 years, basically.
That's true.
You know, so like, I didn't think they were just going to bump him up to a title shot, even though he's done great in the tournament. He's been one of the best, you know, best additions and breakout stars of the tournament, but I didn't think they were going to do that, especially over Okada, who's undefeated. I didn't think they were going to do that off. I think they have another person in mind to end that streak in this tournament, who's much less deserving than Archer. But I think that, you know, Archer's done a great job. You have to give it up to him. Wins or losses, it's really, and that's another thing with him. In this tournament, wins and losses was never the point. Like, it was never going to matter. I always knew he was going to lose a lot. But that doesn't matter, because now he's way more over. And next year, he may be somebody to look out for in the tournament. You know, I knew they weren't really going to push him, you know, really. But he's going to push himself through his performances. And I think he's done that in spades here. So I had no doubt that Okada was winning. And it played out that way.
It's funny. That is the usual match that Bad Luck Fale would have with Okada in the tournament. Having to fight the big man, having to fight from underneath, and getting out of the blackout was very similar to Okada escaping the bad luck fall. So everybody, is, like Lance Archer, has taken over everything that Matt Lagfaley had in this tournament.
And does it 100 times better.
Yeah, the match was good. They didn't go all out. Just a good mid-card match for this show here. It at 7.0 right now.
I'm with you. I like the Zack and Ospreay match a bit better, but this was a decent match. I actually thought this was one of Archer's lesser matches of the tournament, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought all of most of his other ones were better outside of the Foley match. It's an interesting thing, like I said, but I thought this was, to me, this felt like a very old school kind of match. Like, Okada was Hogan here, pretty much, and Archer was a big guy. Like that he was going against. That's how it felt to me in a lot of the ways.
So the next one had Zanada defeating Kenta. And I was so surprised when I browsed through Twitter after the match, and a lot of people were so surprised about Zanada defeating Kenta, and some were really angry about that. And that is something that G1 always does. People get really angry when something goes against what they planned. That is always very funny to me.
This wasn't even that surprising, though.
No! That's my point of it. It's just surprising at all. Why wouldn't Kenta lose to Zanada?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this was the least surprising surprise ever in G1 history. Like, you know, these guys are not... if Kenta had beat Zanada, it wouldn't have been surprising either. But how is one of these guys over the other in the tournament? What have you seen that justifies that take?
Yeah. About the match itself, I thought it was an acceptable one. Not anything special, I thought.
I said on the Patreon, this was like the high end of average.
Yeah.
For these two. And see, this goes to my point. Sonata is so maligned right now and so lackluster. Nobody remembers that he's been one of the most pushed people in this company for like the first half of the year. He made it to the finals of the New Japan Cup and got a title shot all in this year.
And it's crazy. And when he got to the top rope today after that tag match, after the six-man tag match that previewed Okada versus Zanada, you could still feel that the people are really excited about this feud.
I know. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's crazy. It is crazy. Why would anyone be into a Sonata feud? But Sonata, like, I don't really like him that much, and I haven't liked him in this tournament, really. But he is, like, the fans see something in him for whatever reason. And that's a lot different than his opponent in this match, who is very not over with the crowd in this tournament. It's been very awkward. he's at a very awkward tournament.
Have been some comments on YouTube. Shout out to the Super J cast. They translated some of the comments that fans made underneath Kenta promos that they put up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And they really want this guy to be gone.
Yeah, they hate him.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Dylan, that's YouTube. YouTube usually is extreme in all directions you can go. There is a lot of love for a lot of stuff, but there is an immense ton of hatred for stuff too. So I don't really think that YouTube is the standard bearer we should talk about. But definitely Kenta has not been as over as they probably wanted to.
Yeah, like his matches, like he's not over in the crowd either, though, is the problem to me. It feels like, and like I said, somebody was telling me, like Voice of Wrestling messaged me on Twitter and was like, oh, it adds to his matches, like all of the stuff. And I was like, no, like this isn't, he doesn't get heat at all. Like he gets active disinterest. Like the crowd hates him. Like that's not just YouTube. Like they don't.
That worked once. It worked for the Okada match. The crowd was really rallying behind Okada in that match. That worked. But that's the one match.
Yeah, it felt like Okada was over, and Kenta, whenever Kenta would take over, they'd sit on their hands. Like, I don't even think it really worked for that match. Like, I just don't think he's very... And I don't think his performances have done anything to change anyone's mind, either, to be honest with you. Like, this match was for Sonata. Like, this wasn't anything to write home about at all. I'd say the Tanahashi match was probably his best one. And I mentioned it, you know...
And even that was not... It didn't hit the level of the performances that Sonata had in a New Japan Cup. He didn't only have the push, but he also was good in this tournament. And for this I know that a lot of people are very down on him and say he sucks. He doesn't suck, but he's not lighting the world on fire. And he should, really.
I don't know what's up with him, like I said, because I feel like he's not even performing at his... I didn't like him at his best, really. Like, I didn't think he was that special. But here, it's like he's not at his best at all in this tournament. Like I said, he just looks... It looks like there's something off with him. And I don't know what it is, really. When he wrestles, he's not as crisp anymore. Like, when he does stuff, he looks really shitty, like, just, like, physically. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if it's mentally
or... He wrestles like he's a robot.
He wrestled like he's a robot, but now he's like before he would do all of his moves perfectly and things like that. He'd be a super athlete, but I don't really get that vibe from him anymore. It's just, he's just not very good. Like, that's kind of why I think of him. He's just not very good. And Kenta, like I said, not that great either. Like I said, to be honest with you, he's considerably stuck in third gear, I would say, in this tournament. And the thing is, the weird thing about Kenta is, I don't think any of his matches have been bad, per se. It just feels like they're not what you want to see, and they're not something that anybody that was left out of this tournament could do at the same or higher level. And that's not what you want from Kenta if you're bringing him in, you know? So,
you know, I really like the Okada match, and the Tanahashi match was very good too. So with the two big stars, he had good matches.
That Okada match was questionable, but I'm not with you. I'm not with you on the Okada match, but I mean, that was okay. It wasn't a bad match, but I didn't... Another thing, too, that wasn't all his fault. 27-minute Okada matches are not my favorite in general, so I can't put all the blame on him. Tanahashi match was pretty good. I'd give him props for that. But still, even then, after he won, he even hit his promo. He pulled a Kenny Omega and was like... he was like, well, I see some people leaving for the entranceway already, pretty much. Like, they didn't even want to watch his promo afterwards. Dang, I feel bad for him.
That's bad.
Like, it's clear that he's broken down and, like, he can't perform at that level anymore. But, like, the fans are ruthless in New Japan right now. I thought I was negative on him, but I don't hate him. He's, like, a decent player. Like, if he was the worst person in the block, I think he'd be fine.
Yeah, the thing about it is, when you bring in a guy with this name, with Kenta...
Exactly.
You have to expect this guy to be more than decent. Like, he has totally different expectations behind him than a guy like, I don't know, let's just say Juice Robinson. Like, you expect him to be Kenta.
Well, I told you before the tournament that he's not that guy anymore. Like I said,
I knew that he was not the guy anymore that he was in 2014. It was never going to happen with him.
Yeah.
But as you said, if you bring him in, he needs to be more than decent.
Yeah. I don't know. He's on the hot seat right now for sure. And I'm really surprised by this outright negative reaction. Like I said, I really don't think he's been that bad. To me, he's not. What makes him significantly worse than Okada in this tournament? Like, you know, if you look at their matches up and down, I think if you, and I've done this, so I know it's true, if you graded all of their matches and averaged them out, I don't think Kenta and Okada would be that different.
No, that's true. Just from the match perspective, that's definitely true.
Yeah, but for some reason, Kenta gets hated on, and Okada, you know, he's the golden boy, obviously, in New
Japan.
He's
the golden boy, and just people, as I said, people expect something when you hear the name Kenta.
You're right.
And they will just not... Except that these last 5 years have been so bad for him, they just want to have 2014 Kenta.
I also think that his confidence must be very low at the moment, because you look at that WWE stuff.
The confidence going in must have been very low, and it hasn't gone up from the reactions that the fans gave him. So that must be really tough for him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel kind of bad for him, because it's not, like I said, it's not like he's this terrible worker. It's just he's not that guy anymore. You know, it's like he can't be who he was, and it's hard for him. You know, I have to imagine that's really hard, you know, because I don't get the sense either, because some people have said this. I don't get the sense that he's not trying. I think he's trying his best. And we've seen flashes. In that Okada match, he had that, you know, that slap battle thing. Where he beat the crap out of Okada, and he looked like the old Kenta for a few seconds out of a 27-minute match, pretty much. So, like, I don't know. I just don't think that... I don't think that's... he's taking some unfair heat, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we had one match left. Zanada's loss in going out with his stables mate. Evil was in the main event against Hiroshi Tanahashi. And this really got a high rating from Dave Meltzer, 4 3/4 stars, Dylan. We have it at 7.97 in Cage Match. I think that's fair. I didn't love it as much. I thought it was a very good match. But what took it down for me was I really believed they missed the boat here on Evil. Because this was Evil's match to win, I thought.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if I picked it. I don't know if my pick-em's right in front of me. But when I watched this match yesterday, I just thought this is the perfect moment for Evil to get this big victory over Tanahashi. And in the end, he didn't. It's just he's just in his position where he's slotted like for the entire year so far, and nothing is happening with him. I don't know. They took it down for me a bit.
Yeah. I was surprised he got that win over Ibushi earlier in the tournament.
Yeah, you didn't have him planned for any big victories.
Yeah, they gave him one, and that's it, pretty much. And it really didn't matter at the end of it, and it doesn't feel like, because he still feels like the same guy, ultimately. But to me, that's interesting you would say that, because Evil has beaten Tanahashi before, and it felt like they could have gone somewhere with him in the past, but they pulled back, and it's hard to go back. You know, like once you go and then pull back, I always feel like that's hard to like go. Because it's not even something like Sonata. He has lost, but it's for a story. You know what I'm saying? Like once he beats Okada, it's a huge step forward. If Evil beat Tanahashi, what would that really mean? Like I feel like, you know, it just feels like it would be just a random mid-tour win and Evil would still be Evil.
Just the win over Tanahashi. They could have gone back to the point where they were when they had Evil defeat Okada, like he was really hot back then. But then
he'd beaten Okada and Tanahashi in the past.
Yeah, and then they went back and didn't really give him anything, and I felt people were really behind him in this match. And the one thing that I also noted in this match, Dylan, is what took it down for me too is. Gets increasingly harder to believe that Tanahashi would actually win against younger guys like Evil. Just from the way he runs, for example, when he's whipped in the ropes, he must be in so horrible pain when he even tries to run. So I think we're really on the last legs of Tanahashi being in tournaments like these. That makes it hard for me to believe that he would actually be able to beat these hot young guys here in the tournament.
I think we just disagree. I don't think Evil's a hot young guy. I think he's like mid-card for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I know he is, but he shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, you know, I wish that it wasn't true. I like Evil. I've always defended him. He was one of the guys last year that I was like, man, you know, Evil, they had something with him against Okada, and they threw it all away. And that was a year ago. And like the year since, they really haven't done anything with him. He lost in the first round.
I know.
Yeah, so why do you think they do something now with him?
I don't think that's not my point. My point was I want it to happen. That's why that's why I'm bringing up the point.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I want a lot of things.
Yeah, I know. You bring them up all the time.
And you're right. You're right, okay? Like I said, I feel you on that one, okay? I got to get behind you on that one. You know, you're right on that one. So, Evil, I'm with you somewhat because I like him. I wish he'd get pushes. But I think I'm the ultimate cynic when it comes to wrestling. See, even when Goto loses...
I was just going to say, that's the years of being a Hiroki Goto fan. That does it to you.
Exactly. Like I told you before, I don't look at wins and losses that way. So to me, like if somebody I like loses, I just move on. You know, I have to. You know, it would drive me insane if I didn't. But Tanahashi... I think he's going to – I have bad news for you if you think we're on the last legs, because I think he's going to be in this until they stretcher him out physically do it anymore, to be honest with you. But I agree with you, though. Like, in all honesty, it's clear that he must – so I was watching with Ken, you know, great-grandpa Ken. I was watching some of these tournament shows, and he was like – he thinks, like, wrestling's real. So he always says, like, go for the legs – they're his weak point. His legs are what's hurting him. And then I always say his whole body is injured. It's always my comeback to that. And I think that's true, pretty much. There's no one injury with Tanahashi. Everything is there. But I will say this. I thought the crowd was really into this match more than anything else on the show. And I thought they got into this match well, which speaks well of Evil as well.
Yep.
And Tanahashi, I thought, did some good stuff. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't some life changing match, but I thought it was up there. One of the best of the show for the crowd, at least. Basically, if you take a star rating off of Dave Meltzer's, you have mine because I had 3.5 for Osprey and Zach, and 3.75 for Tanahashi and Evil. So, Dave, just take a star off, and we're in agreement, pretty much up there.
Best match of the show for sure was Zach and Will Ospreay.
I like this one better.
There was too much
like stuff that didn't work in the other match to me, but this was more like a traditional match. But I can see why you'd like the other one better.
Yeah. So was a fun show. Some parts dragged it down, obviously, with the Ibushi and Bad Luck Fale match. But overall, I'd say like if you rate it, would be like a 7 out of 10.
Like to me, like two recommended matches, and the Okada match was pretty good, but not special.
Yeah, exactly. So that was block A. Then we went to Fukuoka for the 12th day of the tournament with block B action. First of all, in the undercard, we had a fun brawl between the Suzuki-gun teams. Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. attacked Lance Archer and Yoshinobu Kanemaru from behind. And they had a fun match there. Very good stuff was Kota Ibushi, Henare, and Honma against Tanahashi, Renarita, and Shota Umino. If they only had switched Honma with Yua Omura, would have been a perfect match to me. Like, the intensity between Henare and Renarita was insane once again. Just some great stuff between these young guys.
See, I hate watching these kind of matches because whenever I watch them, I think, man,
I know.
Instead of these other guys. Or Henare, he's somebody that's constantly overlooked, and I think he would have been a great choice instead of some people in the G1.
They set up a great spot for the Tanahashi and Ibushi singles match that's coming up in Osaka. When Tanahashi went for a low drop kick, Ibushi landed with a double stomp on his chest. That was a great spot. We also had a good six-man tag match. Chaos, Okada, Osprey, and Yoshihashi defeated Bushi, Evil, and Sanada. Some cool-looking stuff between Evil and Osprey. I didn't get why Osprey was holding up his junior heavyweight title and showing it to Evil. Like, Evil wouldn't challenge for that, bro.
He is kind of short, but I don't think he fits the weight limit, though.
No.
That's what they should do next with him. Do a storyline where he has to lose weight to make weight for the junior heavyweight title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the first match of block action, we got Jeff Cobb defeating Shingo Takagi. Maybe that's 7.36 rated. Six people have rated it right now. What was your opinion on this match?
I thought this was Cobb's best match of the tournament.
I think it was definitely.
Yeah, I thought it was. I mean, I think Cobb has been like way near the bottom of people in this tournament. Very boring wrestler and not over, much like Kenta, not over with the fans, and even worse in the ring. So I really haven't enjoyed his run at all, but here I felt like Shingo finally brought it out of him. And he is somebody that I think a secret that you have here is Shingo really found a way to bump for him in such a great way and put him over so strong that the crowd started to buy into him by the end here. I thought this was the most the crowd had been into any of Cobb's matches. And Cobb paid him back, too, with that pumping bomber cell.
That was awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
He just looked like he was completely out of it. That was a great face that he had.
Yeah, that was an awesome spot. I was like, man, Ring of Honor Cobb, finally you're showing up here in Japan. This is what I've been waiting for, Cobb, all this tournament. And it felt like he really held his own. The Ishii match was good. But I thought that was and we've seen later on in the tournament, that was a low-end Ishii match, ultimately.
Yeah, we're going to talk about him in a bit, too.
Yeah, we have Ishii, another Ishii match to talk about. Shingo, I thought, has been a very welcome addition to this tournament, and he did a great job here. I thought the crowd was into this. Great opener to the G1 to me. I really like this match.
I thought it started out a little slow, but it picked up by the minute, actually. It got better and better as the match progressed,
yeah.
And they just had an awesome finishing sequence with everything around the Made in Japan, then the Last of the Dragon, and the Tour of the Islands. That just worked perfectly between those two guys. And so I would agree, this is Jeff Cobb's best match, and I hope we get to see more of this.
Me too, because I think the guy's got talent. You know, we've seen it in Ring of Honor, but so for some reason in Japan, it's been not there yet, I feel like. So, like I speculated on the Patreon about maybe some kind of mental cause for it. Maybe he's just not, maybe being in a different country has shaken him a little bit, and he's just now getting his footing in Japan now. And I'm hopeful that's true, because I think he can still have some killer matches in him if he can really step up. And Shingo, like I said, great tournament so far, I would say, for him.
Yeah. Even though he has only won two matches, more importantly for him, it was to show that he can hang with the heavyweights, and he could. And one thing that I really liked, what they did here, is they had Satoshi Kojima on commentary for this one.
Yep.
And both guys threw some great lariats, too. Not only Shingo with Pumping Mama, but also Jeff Cobb one time threw this counter lariat on Shingo Takagi that looked very Kojima-esque.
Yeah, he raised his arm up, too, after he hit. Shingo, like I said, that's the great part about this match, is that they both put each other over so well, I feel like. They both sold each other great and made everyone's offense look devastating. So, cool match here, I would say.
Next up, we had the match of the year for this one, for this 2019. There's not going to be anything that's going to be better than Toru Yano and Jon Moxley. It was outstanding, Dylan. I loved it.
Hey, how long was this match?
It was 5 minutes and 8 seconds. That was the second longest Toru Yano match in the tournament. But it felt like so much shorter. So they did this story where Toru Yano sold his DVD to Jon Moxley the day before.
That was awesome.
And he stole the DVD and the money. And then today, He wanted to give Jon Moxley the DVD and 5,000 yen on top, so 10,000, but Jon Moxley wouldn't take it. He just wouldn't take it. And the finish of it was perfectly done. He taped Shota Umino to Jon Moxley. They were basically a three-legged guy on the outside. Shota couldn't get up anymore, and he was counted out. Perfectly done. And, you know, the question was how this match would turn out, and the question was, would Jon Moxley be in for a Toru Yano match? And the answer is, he was 150% in for a Toru Yano match, and that's what made it great, in my opinion.
I'll tell you what wasn't great. The fact that...
You always tell me what wasn't great about Toru Yano. It's nothing new for me.
Well, his match sucked, any technical standard. But Moxley, more importantly, though, like, you know, you accept what Yano is going to do in his matches, pretty much. You know, he does the same stuff over and over, and it's fine. Moxley, though, starting out 5-0, undefeated in New Japan, and to lose to Toru Yano.
Yeah,
and that's
true. I know.
Well, you know, but you didn't say nothing about that part.
I knew you were going to say that, so I didn't have to bring it up.
Exactly. Like, this win would have meant something, like just like the Naito one earlier.
That's the one really that is head-scratching about this, because what's Toru Yano going to do with it?
Nothing. Like I said, just like the Naito win. Like, that's the problem with Yano in this tournament. Everyone says he helps the G1 so much, but we've seen two matches he's actively hurt other people in the tournament. So that's just great. Like, but I'm glad you enjoyed this stupid 5-minute match that nobody's going to win a year. That means nothing. And like I said, it could have been a big win. Moxley's been super protected. But no, Yano has to get the win over Moxley to end the tournament, or end this tournament streak for Moxley, and the streak in general, and ever since he left WWE, probably, at least in New Japan. I predicted this, though. Like I said, I said this on the last show, that essentially...
Well, he would have to lose to Toru Yano, otherwise everybody would have been out.
Exactly.
Like this was a sure lock. We talked about Tetsuya Naito beating Jon Moxley being a sure lock, but it turned out that it wasn't. But this one, I was 100% sure that Toru Yano would win.
I didn't think it was a sure lock, because if they wanted Jay White to make the finals instead of Naito, Moxley could have won. White would have still been alive. But I think Naito's still going to win the block. So Like that, I just set that up perfectly. So I figured that I basically said, if Moxley wins, White's winning the block. If Yano wins, Naito's winning the block, and Yano got the win, as I anticipated, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. That was this match. So John Moxley still sending a 10 after this match, which then led to Tetsuya Naito having to pick up a victory against Juice Robinson, which he did. I thought this was a good match. Naito brought in a little bit of heel attitude, mocking Juice Robinson for his juice deal that he does with his pumping fist. I don't know. It felt weird to me. And in the end, I thought it was nothing that Naito has done in this tournament so far has really been that great, in my opinion. He has had many good matches. Like, for example, the Ishii match he had. That was a very good match. But
that was low-end Ishii match.
Exactly. It was a low-end Ishii match, and it also was a low-end Naito versus Ishii match. They have had much better matches before. That's so this was another one of those where Naito just did his stuff, which unquestionably, it's very good what he does. But it's rarely that he surprises me anymore with anything that he does, except for his heel shtick that he had against Juice Robinson for this one, and you could maybe expect that too. So I thought it was okay what they did. We have it at 6.55. That's about right, I think. Like, it was a good mid-card match.
Well, you said unquestionably he's very good, and I'm about to question that. Because I like, look at his whole year. I really haven't been into anything he's done this entire year.
That's true.
To be honest with you. And in general, I'm just not as into him as a lot of people are. And I get the feeling that, like, sometimes I think his fans are going to be ride or die with him. I don't know. It doesn't feel like he's the hottest guy like he was in the last few years as much this tournament to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he did fine here, but he started to work heel more, like you said, against this Juice match. I don't know. I don't know about Naito, to be honest with you. Like, if they decided that he wasn't going to win, I'd honestly be fine with that, to be honest with you. Like, but it was a fine match between these two. Like you said, mid-card, solid match, but nothing anybody will remember, you know, a month from now, if not even the next couple of shows. Yeah.
Surely not.
Better than the next match, though.
I think something that people will remember is this match, because I thought it was really bad.
Yes, very memorable. It's one of the worst matches of the year.
Dude, this... Yeah. See,
Why is Taichi the G1? Why is Taichi the G1?
We're not going over this discussion again, Dylan. He has had good matches. But yeah, I can see your point. We talked about the Noah League, and they got rid of all the guys that don't win in the end. Why is Taichi in? It's a very good question. But he is in.
There were five guys that could have been in the spot besides in here. That's
you
the
know,
problem.
Usually, like the heel shticks, they do individually, but the mix of the heel shticks between those two guys, it was absolutely horrendous what they did here. They totally killed the crowd with the first like 5 minutes of it being basically only stalling and walking around the ring, going in, going out, getting counted on the outside. They had these brief moments where they actually wrestled. And those moments woke the crowd up briefly. But then they went back to their heel stuff. Ghetto was there. Kanemaru was there. They had to do stuff on the outside with these guys. Ghetto was in the ring. Dude.
This sucked.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this on the Patreon, like, in all honesty, like, it annoys me Taichi's in the G1 over those other guys who are way better, but you made a good point, like, you kind of alluded to that. When he actually wrestles, like...
We've seen it with Shingo and with Cobb.
It's not that Cobb, like I said, not Cobb, like I said, Shingo, though, a little bit. Taichi, though, the point is, though, Taichi, when he actually tries to wrestle, he's not that bad. You know, like, some parts are bad, but I think sometimes these kicks, he went from awful to mostly awful, but sometimes they can be better, you know, so Taichi, I don't know. Like, I don't know about him. I like, too, some of his... The match with Goto was a great example, because I thought early on they did just enough heel stuff with Miho. Mm-hmm. He did some really clever stuff there. It wasn't his same old bullcrap with the microphone and all that. Mm-hmm. It was actually really clever, kind of well-worked. Then they started to have a really good match, and then they went with all the same bullcrap that you've seen a million times that totally derailed everything.
Yeah.
It felt like. The Taichi-Goto match is the perfect example of the negatives of Taichi, because when he started to wrestle good, it was good, and then it didn't work, you know? Like, so. And Jay White, this isn't the first time to me. Like, I know you love him for whatever reason, but to me, he's not over to this crowd at all. Like,
well,
we saw the...
Why would he, with this shtick, why would he be over with this heel gimmick that he's going with? Like, I've said a couple of times, if he was the Switchblade guy that he initially was, I think he would be over with the crowd, but he has to have this ghetto guy besides him, which actively hurts him.
And the Switchblade guy that he originally was died in the Dome against the Tanahashi, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't over.
Yeah.
Like, finals. You know, so.
That was his debut, yeah.
Like I said, he's had flashes, but I don't think this has been a good tournament for him either. And I don't think he's very over with the crowd. Again, I don't think this gimmick is working at all for him. And I don't think he's working at all. Like, he's just not very good, is the problem. Like, much like Sonata in A Block.
He's much like Taichi, Dylan. Like, when he actually wrestles, his stuff is on point, except for these reversal sequences that he does.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, Taichi, you say that, but Taichi's kicks usually are terrible.
I know.
And
they usually are.
and Jay White's reversal sequences are usually terrible.
Yeah.
And this finisher he has is always terrible.
Yeah, because it always comes off of a reversal sequence.
Exactly. Like, see, like I said, so to me, we're seeing two guys who just really aren't very good a majority of the time have a terrible match. Like that's really all I thought
about. I
don't
know. I think they are bad at what they think they have to do, but there would be other stuff that they could do instead, like wrestle a match.
I think White, you could say that, because he's had evidence of being a great wrestler when he was a young lion. For some reason, he's decided. And like I said, I think the thing with him, I wouldn't be surprised if he hasn't been pulled in tons of different directions. I made this point on the Patreon. I wouldn't be surprised if he's been and pulled into a ton of different directions, and he himself has pulled himself into a ton of different directions. You mentioned the original Switchblade. That went like two or three character changes within the first 3 months,
yeah,
pretty much.
I know.
But, you know, and then he's had more since then. He's had like five or six character changes in the past year that he's had. And even then, he's very inconsistent in that. So I don't know, like, why or who's giving him advice, but I think they should... He needs to change everything around to me, because I think this Switchblade gimmicks, it's on its last legs with this crowd, because I don't think he's very over in any of his matches. And the matches to me, and like everyone likes different things. Somebody might say Jay White and Taichi are amazing wrestlers. And I know
there was even one guy that answered to my tweet that said that he really enjoyed the match. I want to read that. Let me see. He said, "It did the job. As I was off the seat in this match, they told a great heel story with Taichi showing frustration that he couldn't out-heel Jay. That was a match." Well, I didn't see that, but there clearly are people who like this.
It was a match. Yeah. I think that was the most true statement.
It was very much a wrestling match.
Yeah, and the crowd disagreed. So,
yeah.
Like, I guess it really didn't do the job, ultimately. So, that's really my problem. Like I said, even with Sonata, I'm a little bit easier on his push, because every time you see him, he's somebody that I really don't like in ring, but the crowd takes to him, and I'm not going to take it away from him. I'm not just going to BS you. You know, if the crowd was super into White, and we've seen that in flashes with White, if he's against a huge, you know, star, I think the crowd will buy into him more. And Taichi's not that guy, unfortunately, to this crowd. Like, if he were against Tanahashi or Okada, those have been his best matches, pretty much, against the big stars that the crowd can buy into. But otherwise, I think they're pretty much over this. And I know I've been over it from the beginning. So I think, yeah, you know, I have to agree with them there. But however you want to slice it, this wasn't good.
So something that we both agree sucked, let's go to something that was universally loved by everybody. Yeah. Because Big Match Tom and Goto 1 did it again, Dylan.
I love this match, Mason. This is my jam right here. You know, Ishii and Goto, these are my guys going at it. And here, so this definitely washed the taste of the previous match out of my mouth.
And our guy Flosh said it perfectly on Twitter: these two can't do anything wrong.
I mean, listen, Flosh knows best when it comes to this, you know, because Ishii and Goto. I always say it: this is the soul food match. No matter how many times you eat it, it still tastes good. This is the Memphis style match right here. This is the Memphis barbecue right now.
Yeah, the match prior to that was very much a cold microwave dish.
Yeah, a cold microwave dish that like is really bad. Like it has cabbage and you know, all kinds of stuff like that you don't want to eat on there. Maybe some, like, for me, like anybody from Memphis, it's like a vegetarian dish. Mm. You know, like there was no meat, there was no beef in the.
Oh, listen, I can show you pictures of vegetarian meals that I have cooked, and they are delicious.
That's true. Like I said, and some stuff is good. Like, you don't have to have meat to be tasty.
Exactly.
But there was no beef in the prairie.
No, but there was. They had all the beef in this match. Beef was out for the matches prior to that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was a well-done meal right here. 5 ribs out of 5, I give this on the Memphis barbecue scale. Goto and Ishii, you know what this match is like. You've seen these guys wrestle. Yeah. You know, unless you're a new fan, you know, you've probably seen these guys wrestle before, and you know what you're going to get. They didn't rewrite the book. They didn't try anything crazy. Just Goto got a big win over Ishii. It was a great match. I thought this was a very strong match, definitely in the top 5 of the tournament so far for me.
It was outstanding, definitely, and also great thing for Hirooki Goto that he got to close out this show with a great fiery post-match promo that the G in G1 Climax stands for Goto.
That is his catchphrase in this tournament, which totally justifies to me what I said before, because somebody said something like, Goto will never beat Moxley. But actually, if you look at...
He has to beat Moxley.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you look at... And plus, though, this was actually... And some people have asked me, too. They're like, what's wrong with the G1 this year? Like, do you blame the booking? And it's like, well, I mean, the matches aren't as good as previous years. But the booking, to me, isn't the problem. Because I think this was a really clever way. What they're doing is a very good way, because it had great doubt for Naito winning, which is something we all thought was obvious, right?
Exactly. And that is the exact point that you have to bring up for this booking. The booking is completely working out, and that's what I said before. People are going crazy right now about these runs, about these undefeated runs. That totally reminded me when Shelton Benjamin went 4-0 in the G1 Climax, and people were crazy about how can they do this? He's winning the G1. Why Shelton Benjamin? It's the same right now.
Hey, Shelton wasn't that bad anyway, too. It's like he was a huge idol of me wrestling, by the way. Like, he was like my main.
I can see that. I just bring it up because people were so crazy about that.
You're totally right about all that. And here, Moxley again. Like, to me, I just think that they did it in a clever way to create doubt for something we all thought was obvious. Like I said, and it justifies Goto's earlier losses. So he could make this big run at the end and still not win, pretty much. Like, that's what those losses to Tai Chi and stuff were about. So that's why I didn't really get that upset about them, because I had a vision of this tournament, and it's basically coming to pass how I thought it would.
Looking at Goto, our pickems right now, Flosh and I picked Goto to beat Moxley too, so...
Yeah, see?
Same team.
So good stuff there, Goto and Moxley. You know, I thought that this is good. That they've done things this way at B Block 2. Even though the matches, like I said, these shows are really up and down at times because of White, Tai Chi, Yano. It's hard to really have strong full shows. Even Naito, to me, is kind of weak at this tournament. And Cobb as well. So that's like half the block to me that I'm not really into. But still, the booking-wise, I think they've done a really good job and clever, because like I said, they've evaded making it so obvious that they would. And I know there was like legitimate doubt after Naito lost the last match to Moxley.
Yep, and that's great. So, that's really great.
Yeah, exactly. See, so I have to give Gato props on this. I'm not always his biggest fan, but I think he did a great job with B-Block. If things turn out how we think it will.
And you know, inside these tournament settings, there's usually only so much you can do to create doubt, because we've seen this strategy a lot of times with different companies too, that someone goes on a losing or winning streak and in the end gets either caught up or he starts winning a lot to make the finals. So there's only so much you can do, but he's really making the most of it in this tournament, I feel.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think B Block especially has done good. A Block has been, I think that's a little not as strong, just because I think they had, it was less of an obstacle to overcome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they've done a good job with Okada going undefeated.
So before we go back to Okada, let's quickly stick to Block B, because I want to make this point.
Okay.
Tomohiro Ishii. That's another point that our friend Flosh brought up. Is this the single best run of a wrestler in the G1 Climax history?
No, this wasn't even as good. Last year was the best one to me. Like, this hasn't been as good as that. I mean, like let's look at his blog. I've had it so far. Let me look up his last year, because I have everything written down and matches that I've rated on there. But I know in this block, the Cobb match, like, see, the thing is, his own standards are so high.
Mm-hmm.
The matches earlier on that people went crazy about, I wasn't as into it. And I just,
they've
all been surprised, like, as I predicted, pretty much. Like, those first two matches aren't nearly as good as these last few that he's had to me. Did you see that Juice match with Ishii?
Yes! It was outstanding.
That was a freaking amazing match.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Moxley,
I have
it
in my
match.
Top three right now.
And see, exactly. This match, like, all of his, like, he's going to have all of the top five by the end of this tournament, pretty much. By the end of it.
But you may be right here, Dylan. I'm just looking at his 2018 run. He had the match against Naito. We have at 9.12. The one against Goto was even better last year, 9.51, one of the best matches of the tournament.
That was an amazing match.
The one
that
with Omega, 9.74. So, maybe his last year was even better. It's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, his standards are so high. Like, even this, he's been by far the MVP of the tournament in ring. Like, there's nobody even on his level at the moment. And last year, Ibushi was having a great run, and this year he isn't as good as last year by far. So, like, there's nobody that's really even challenging him right now. He's on his own planet at the moment. But compared to last year's was better. You know, so you have to give it up to this guy. What an incredible wrestler Tomohiro Ishii is. I just, man, like I said, it doesn't matter who he's wrestling, he's going to do something crazy and awesome and have a great match. One of the best to ever do it, to me, in my opinion. I don't think that's on a stretch. I think he's one of the greatest in-ring performers of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Goto showed out again here. I thought he did great, too. His run hasn't been as strong, but I thought he had similarly good matches against White earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
He tailed off with the Yano match and the Tai Chi match and stuff like that. But he brought it back here with Ishii, so I was happy to see that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he still has Jeff Cobb left. That should be a good match. Should be a good fit for Cobb, too. Goto has Moxley, and he also still has Shingo. So those three should be really good, too.
Yeah, I think he could step up as one of probably the number two of B-Block with those matches. Moxley's up there, too. I've really been impressed with Moxley. Me too.
There has been no match so far that we said it before. We weren't really sure how he would go in here, and there could be a bad match, but so far, nothing has been bad.
No, he's done great in pretty much all of his matches. Even the Tai Chi match was above average for Tai Chi standards. And I think that Ishii match was, that is close. It's going to be close depending on which Ishii match is your favorite, because he's probably going to have all the top five.
Exactly.
You know, like, we don't even need to ask him about the top five anymore. It's all Ishii's matches, pretty much. He's going to cover it all. So whichever one is your favorite, but that was definitely
you
one.
You can make a case for all of them, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially, like, to me, these last three.
Yeah,
especially,
the last three, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's really turned it up, like, to the Ishii we know and love, pretty much here. So, to me, he's the one that's really, like, carried the tournament, because I think, like I said, and even then, I think some guys have really dropped off from last year. Ibushi, I don't think, is nearly as good as he was last year. And that was an amazing run he had last year. He was never going to match it. But I think, in general, the match quality is, it's interesting, because you have a lot less of really bad stuff because Tonga's there, but you also have a lot less top-tier stuff. It's like Ishii's really only one delivering that in this tournament.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting once we go to Osaka, because Osaka usually has some outstanding matches. We have a double shot there. Okada and Sanada, Tanahashi and Ibushi, Ospreay and Evil, Zack Sabre and Lance Archer, Kenta and Bad Luck Fale. Well, okay, yeah. Naito and Shingo in Block B, Moxley and White, Goto and Cobb, Taijin Juice, Ishii and Yano. So there should be some great stuff on that double shot in Osaka. But before that, Dylan, let's go back to Block A briefly, because there's one thing that I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Do we agree that Okada is losing to Sanada and Ibushi?
That's exactly what I was thinking when I made that comment earlier about they had someone in mind.
Yeah.
Originally, I predicted a draw.
I did too.
Yeah. But I think the way this tournament has played out, he's just going to take the loss, pretty much.
Yeah. Let's just do a little bit of fantasy booking, Dylan. Let's just say Okada goes undefeated and wins the tournament. What are they going to do until Wrestle Kingdom?
Well, first of all, on one hand, I don't want to see that. But on the other hand, I kind of would like that, because then we wouldn't have the briefcase.
So yes!
You see, the bane of my existence could be taken out with this. So I'm not completely against that. But if they did something like that, which I think, you know, I don't think that's going to happen, but it is a possibility. You know, and you could have something where, hey, maybe Moxley or Jay White makes the finals and Okada wins, and then he challenges Naito for title versus title. That's a rumor going around right now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, let's just say that happened.
Some other people have brought up the idea that Okada wins the tournament and then calls out Kenny Omega, and I actively dislike that.
No, don't do that. Like, please don't do that. He's busy with AEW too. But I don't know. Maybe they could do that.
There is no place for him to be in that TV start early October, and he would have to be around for King of Pro Wrestling. So that's not going to happen, I assume.
Well, they did something with Jericho earlier the year where he really wasn't around for like 3 months before his title shot. So I don't think that's why he'll be
that
gone.
Long?
I think he made his challenge in April, and then
wasn't it in May?
It may have been in May. It may have been late May.
Yeah, but he wasn't around for four to 8 weeks, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he was gone for the whole time before that, too. Mm. So he was really gone for like 6 months before his title challenge.
Yeah.
Title challenge. And coming off of a loss on that, which Omega would as well, if that happened.
Mm.
I don't like that idea. But it would be something, I guess, if they wanted to do that. If they really... The only way I could see something like that happening is if somebody, Harold or Gato or whoever, you know, said, look, this Ring of Honor deal, we have to drop them. We need to hook up with AEW.
Interesting stuff that you bring up, Dylan, because they announced the Global Wars tour, Ring of Honor did. And Global Wars is now just Ring of Honor and CMLL.
Yeah, like I said. And New Japan's running their stomping grounds, too, in the Northeast.
Yep.
So it's funny how all these things are coming into place, pretty much. So if they wanted to do that, maybe that would be the price they would have to pay and put Omega in the main event again. But I, obviously, as a fan, I love their 2 out of 3 falls match. I thought that was a tremendous match.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I don't want to see a repeat of their dome match, because I wasn't as into that in general. And Omega, to me, is just like, you know, I'll be fair to him, but I'd rather somebody else get the win. And I think it would be better if somebody else got put over as well. But, you know, I think Knight's going to win the tournament at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I haven't changed my mind, even when everyone freaked out about Moxley beating Naito. I think Naito's going to win. And if Okada wins... you know, it is what it is. Like, I guess, if anything, that is the one thing he's never done in New Japan. He's done literally everything else there is to do, but he's never won the G1 as champion.
You know, I think actually it would be perfect to do that next year, to have the IWGP champion win the G1, because then it would have been exactly 20 years since the last time it happened.
That would be cool if that happened. Yeah, yeah, because Sasaki did it in 2000.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, and Muto did it in 1995, so, yeah.
like I said, you know, like I said, that would be cool. I hope it's not Okada, though, because then that would mean Okada would have to lose the title, then gain it back before the G1 next year. So we don't want any of that again. No offense to Okada, nothing against him. It's just we've seen that story many, many times at that moment. So, yeah. I don't know.
Alrighty, that's it for the two shows.
Hey, who do you think is going to win A Block, Okada or Ibushi?
I will still go with Ibushi and Naito.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think there's any.
I haven't changed my mind ever since the tournament started, so I think that's the way they will go.
And they've set it up perfectly with Sonata coming right up to finally get his win over him. Or even like if he draws, would that eliminate? But Ibushi, he'd need the loss. The problem.
I think he needs the loss because Ibushi. Yeah. Well, Ibushi is at 8.
Yeah.
So Ibushi could still gain 6, which would be 14, and Okada would have 13. Okay. That would work out.
Okada would need to lose another match.
Ah, that's true. Yeah. He would have to lose to Evil, and that's not happening. No.
Hey, you never know. I could see something too, where maybe he loses to Evil and Sonata. And his run up to the G1 or to the Tokyo Dome is he has to beat all of the Ingobernables.
That is a very cool story. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, see, I can see that. And plus, Evil gets a push, so you could be happy with it.
Yeah,
and I'd be happy too, even though they're kind of
bad. Dude, let's do that. I'm fired up right now.
Hey, Gato, if you're listening, I just gave you a great idea right there. Yeah.
So that's it so far. I would say, Dylan, we return for another show after the Osaka double shot on the weekend.
Sure.
And then also name our top matches of the tournament, because as I said, usually something happens in Osaka that derails everything that you had so far in your top 5. We'll see how that goes. It will be August 3rd, August 4th, and we'll be back on with a show either directly. I guess I can watch the show live because I will be going to the academy, at least that I've planned, because the Strong Hearts are coming in to WXW this weekend.
How about that?
Yeah, so I will be going to Essen on the Sunday. So I guess on the Monday we'll be back with another show.
All right, that sounds good to me. I don't think anything's going to beat Ishii's facing Yano, so the next best match probably won't happen there. Naito and Shingo, though, that's a very anticipated match. I think if Naito, this is like he needs to bring it against Shingo. Like this, he might have been saving it for him because he's notorious for dogging it earlier on and then having last match or two.
Yeah.
Pretty much, he's like the new Nakamura. Like pretty much,
a very good comparison. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, so this is a match he really needs to bring it though against Shingo, in my opinion.
Yeah. Good. So that's it so far for the G1 Climax and everything else we brought up on this show. If you want to get into interaction with us about anything we discussed or said or brought up on this show, you can do that on Twitter. I'm at Striga, STRIGGA. And Dylan is there as well, at Dylan0Sky. There's also an email address, japan@mlw.com. And just let us know what you thought about the tournament so far, what you thought about Ishii, what you thought about the Taichi and Jay White match, what you thought about anything else, basically. So just let us know. And so I want to thank you all for listening, and also want to thank you all that have subscribed to our Patreon. Thank you for that. And this has been the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you all for listening, for donating, it's not really a donation, it's just pay us.
You get good stuff for the payment, though. Like exactly. I said, we don't leave you hanging. Like I said, we'll give you some content.
We'll give you something back. It's not a donation.
Exactly. Like I said, it's a fair value, I would say, too. Exactly. And this month is going to be big, too, because like you said, post G1, I've got a bunch of big projects planned for the $5 tier, especially.
See, these projects, they are so secret that I don't even know about them yet.
Oh, well, you know one. Like,
You're
not gonna count it. Yeah, but the other one I'll tell you about later.
Okay. I see.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I'll tell you about it. It's a very cool project, though. You know, maybe you'll even be, I don't know if you'll be on it, because it's very wide in scope. I feel like I'm someone, when it's a big project, you know, I have to handle the majority of it, I feel like, sometimes. So I'm going to handle it because I'm really excited about it. But everyone keep an eye out for patreon.com/EasternLariat. And even, hey, for the G1, it doesn't have to be the $5 tier. Give us a shot on the $1 tier. That's all you need. I think we'll win you over, even if it's just the $1 tier. So check that out. You still get all the G1 updates on the $1. So good stuff.
Yep, that's true. So thank you for listening. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.